Good morning, everybody. It's morning here in Finland. It's 5 a.m. GMT in London. And for those New Yorkers and East Coast people who may be on, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And if you're really dedicated in Brazil, it's probably 2 or 3 a.m. Well, we continue. This is our sixth initiative, sixth program in our Dissipation of Glamour initiative, and what we are doing is to take certain selections from this wonderful book that was basically, it was created as a series of lessons for one of the groups of nine. You know, the Tibetan had several groups of nine, which he did organize, telepathic communicators, and then this is for the trained observers. That's what we are trying to become. And then for the healers, magnetic healers, and then for the educators in the New Age, I think that's really as far as he got in terms of organizing groups of nine. But I do begin to wonder whether the book, The Destiny of the Nations, was not written for the fifth seed group, which was the political workers. You know, he really has written in all the areas, if we can understand, perhaps a little bit lighter in the area of economics, but certainly in the area of magic and psychology. I would say economics and science are the areas where he has written a little more lightly, but in terms of occult science, it's been tremendous. Well, so before we get into our meditation, we're going to study together. I'd like, you know, welcoming you all and very happy that you're here. There are, you know, about 37 of us at the moment, and people will come and go. We had read last time that there were three phases of the process through which we were passing from the beginner to the aspirant or disciple, working with the light of the soul and eventually with the light of the intuition. And what DK was saying here, that these are modes of contact with soul and spiritual environments, and that eventually by using these three techniques, now we're mostly concentrating on the technique of light at the moment, but we will work also with a technique of indifference for the dispersion of Maya, and we'll work with the technique of the presence. It's a more advanced technique for the dispelling of illusion, but still, you know, the way DK teaches, he mentions many things in a cyclic manner, repeating them in different contexts. So he's going to do that now for us as well. And we're told that each one of these techniques releases the disciple into new fields of awareness and new fields of service. So by using the techniques, we definitely grow. Okay. Right. So let's take a look at what is the reading for today. This is all, I suppose, the page number. We're around a page 192. So he's reviewing these techniques. I've written a few things in and read and underlined a few things here and there, but we'll, you know, mostly read the material in black, which is what DK himself said. The technique of the presence, when successfully followed, enables the intuition to flow in and to supersede the activity of the rationalizing mind and to dispel illusion, substituting for that illusion divine ideas, formulated into concepts which we call ideals. And I would say especially these concepts become ideals, especially when the desire nature is attached to them. Then we begin to seek to bring them into manifestation or to deal with them. The masters, now let's see, so it's dispelling illusion, it's dissipating glamour, and it's dispersing Maya. Now the realm of divine ideas, where anything where the word divine is used, and he's going to elaborate this for us a little bit later, involves the monad. The monad is the divine area of life. up here on the second subplane, of the second cosmic subplane. We call it our monadic plane. And then we get into the spiritual area, which is a sort of a mixture of divine and spiritual. The soul is definitely spiritual, but the spiritual triad is a reflection of the divine life. And he's going to be telling us that the intuition is really emanating from the monad. The realm of ideas, per se, does not begin until we reach the intuitional plane. If we're dealing even with the higher subplane of the mind, we're into thoughts and not ideas per se. They are more concrete embodiments of ideas, but ideas are living beings. Every one of us is in a sense an idea. Every creation is basically a divine idea at its root. So just as long as we know that on the intuitional plane, this is for us the realm of ideas, and every plane above that, including the cosmic planes as we go, are sources of ideas. But in these lower three planes, which are the dense physical body of the planetary logos and or the solar logos, we're not in the realm of ideas. We're in the area where the ideas can be expressed in matter of various kinds. Okay. Going back. So when we deal with the realm of the intuition, we begin to deal with what is called the third initiation, and that is found when the individual is capable of what's called spiritual perception and intuitive instinct. We rise into the realm of the triad as our focal point at that point. Now, he says that the masters are using what we call the mind, at least, only for two activities. And, you know, it's a little bit of a sacrifice on their part, I must say, to reach the minds of their disciples and attract aspirants through the medium of an instrument similar to the disciple's mind. And we can certainly see that, you know, although DK and other masters are functioning in the realm of buddhi, and even to an extent in the realm of atma, they have made the sacrifice of formulating all of these concepts for us so that we can be reached, because we cannot focus in the high realm where they are found. Okay, so that's one thing, is to reach our minds. DK said a peculiar thing. He said one day he's going to have to release all those little lives which he has trapped through his writings. He has somehow imprisoned or coalesced many, many tiny deva forms in order to create his teaching, and one day he'll have to release them. Okay, how does the master's mind also work, or how does he use the mind? This is pretty much the same, to create thought forms on concrete levels that can embody these divine ideas. Now, the divine ideas, of course, are from the realm of the spiritual triad. And not everybody can do this. A lot of people are apparently bringing through, streams of energy which are supposed to come from the higher worlds, but they don't really, and they're not doing such a good job at embodiment. But when you look at someone like Master DK, well, the embodiment has been tremendous and accurate and clear. So the directing agent, now note here, the angel of the presence produces the power to create in this manner. Now that's for us, and this we call the result of the intuition. So there's a progression here. Idea or truth is in the realm of the intuition, and then we perceive it, and then we reproduce it as thought forms. That's the threefold sequence. The ideas are equivalent to truth, and they exist on the Buddhic plane and above. We have to learn through the Buddhic vehicle, which is slowly being organized, and through the Antikarana, to perceive ideas or truth. We don't necessarily do that at all. We perceive a lot of thoughts, and we rarely perceive real ideas. And then we have to, this is a big service, to reproduce these in concrete mental form so that they embody something that will attract others to the idea, even though the intuition of these people that are attracted is not awakened. And I guess, you know, who has the awakened intuition? An arhat, an initiate of the fourth degree. So even we're just learning about the intuition. Now, what is this angel of the presence? You oftentimes hear the term used. The angel of the presence is, I call it, that fragment, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, that fragment of the solar angel, which is invested as a presence within the egoic lotus. So whatever we do within our soul nature, within our egoic lotus, it is somehow supported by this presence of the solar angel. And then this presence introduces us to our own presence, which is the monad. So this is the way the masters are using the mind. Normally they would communicate with each other in much different ways on intuitive levels, but they step it all down for our sake. Now that is a little something about the technique of the presence. And let's see, before I get into the technique of light, maybe I'll stop here for a moment and ask if you have any statements you want to make or any questions you want to offer. Or, you know, I could simply go on to the technique of light. You know, maybe I'll do that, and then we'll look at all of them together, because I think that's all we're going to read today. One cannot read a whole lot of this deep material and really assimilate it adequately, so we'll focus on just a few paragraphs every time, and eventually we'll make our ways through the parts of the book that we have to study. Okay, now the technique of light comes next, and that's the one we're focusing on largely at this point. It says it's more closely related to the mind, not so much to the intuition, although, you know, let us be clear that the intuition is sometimes called the transcendental mind, and it relates it very much to the higher powers of Mercury. And the atmic plane is sometimes called nirvanic mind. So mind keeps going all the way in different ways. Okay, the technique of light is more closely related to the mind and signifies the method whereby the illumination which flows from the soul, whose nature is light, can irradiate not only ideals, but life, circumstances, and events. In other words, the light is going to be applied in our normal three worlds of human evolution. And this will reveal the cause and the meaning of experience. Now, we should really look at that. It is illumination. Of course, sometimes we hear about the illumination of the intuition. That, too, is illumination. But this is more mental illumination and is more related to that period of life when we are aspiring to the second degree, the second initiation, for which we have to have an illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. Okay, that's a little different from the requirements for the third degree, which are more related to the intuition. Now, when we talk about the world of meaning, these different worlds, I think, are important to have in our consciousness. The world of meaning is related to the world of the soul. The world of significance is related to the spiritual triad. So, meaning is of the soul, significance of the spiritual triad. The world of being is higher yet. It's related to the monadic plane and also to the logoic plane, as high as we can go on our cosmic physical plane. And also, you know, sometimes this very high world, the logoic level, is called the world of causes. It causes everything on the cosmic physical plane, but also, you know, within our own egoic lotus, that's also the causal body, and there are a series of lesser causes that come from that level. So that's what he means here. the cause and meaning of the experience. So it's a mental revelation in a way, and we are clear about what's happening, what is the cause, and what is the... Whenever you're talking about meaning, you're talking about context. Now, what is the context of any particular experience, and what place does it hold in the larger whole in which it is working itself out? So, illumination, you know, the soul is light, the soul is light, the soul is light. Okay, it's also in a way love and power, but especially it is light, and it's irradiating not only these things we are striving for, these ideas which we have somehow formulated as concepts and which we're trying to achieve, but it's illuminating everything that happens to us in the lower worlds. Okay, so when the power of the disciple to illumine, that's what we do because we're trying to carry the light and we're trying to throw light upon things. We're the light carriers or the light bearers. When the power of the disciple to illumine is grasped, he has taken the first step towards dispelling glamour, because we have to see clearly and in truth what is really happening. Glamour, in a way, is a big lie, you know. It's not how things really are. And the light reveals how things really are. Now, sometimes we say the truth hurts, and sometimes when your illusions and your glamours are broken, you're left with the cold, hard reality, and it's painful because it hurts your desire nature in a way. You know, you have to give up certain desires and realize they were useless. So we have to begin to have the light of the soul in the mind as the first step towards dispelling glamour. And just, he says, and just as the technique of the presence becomes effective on the mental plane, notice they always work one plane lower, right? So the technique... So this technique, the technique of light, produces powers, produces powers which can become effective on the astral plane, one plane down, and eventually brings about the dissipation and the disappearance of that plane. Eventually, what we call the astral plane and all the phantasmagoria, the matter of the astral plane will necessarily remain, but the phantasmagoria that we have created through ignorant desire and wrong desire, all that will one day disappear. So that's the technique of light, very mental, and involves illumination. And we're learning how to throw light upon our desire nature so we don't get trapped in desires which lead nowhere. And then he says a little bit about the technique of indifference, which relates to Maya. The technique of indifference renders ineffective or neutralizes the hold of substance over the life or spirit functioning in the three worlds. And look at this, for the soul is the evidence of life. That's an amazing statement. For soul is the evidence of life. The soul is the heart center of the monad. The soul is the reflection of the monad. Life is the monad. The soul is the evidence of the monad, is basically what he's saying. So, you know, we're trapped in these lower worlds by what we call substance. Substance is always matter that is one plane higher than the plane we're dealing with. You know, the etheric plane is substantial to the dense physical. The astral plane is substantial to the etheric. The mental plane is substantial to the astral plane, and so forth. It means lying one plane more subtly interior to the plane that we're talking about. So in any way, DK says an interesting thing. He says, a certain don't care attitude is one of the best ways of releasing ourselves from the problems of the astral body, and really from any of the problems of the personality. A certain don't care attitude, which is related to identification as the observer, who is ultimately the soul, and still more ultimately, the monad. Alrighty. Now that's quite a mouthful there, what he's given us. And let's see, do you have, I'll try to make them smaller now, have to make them big enough so I can read them, you know, and then small enough so that we can see it all at the same time. And then we're going to read one more paragraph, I think, before we look at the Ray 5 glamours. We've been looking at a little bit of the different types of glamours every time, and I think it's useful. So anyway, here is what we've just been reading, and let me just get that a little bit more coherent, if I can. Okay, and I'll try to squunch it up a little bit so we can see what's what, and hopefully, yep, we're going to more or less be able to see what we've been reading, more or less. Okay, now, are there any questions or thoughts that you'd like to offer about these three techniques of the presence of light and of indifference, and the different kinds of powers they generate, and the different types of worlds into which they release you? If we use these techniques, we will develop the capacities to deal effectively with higher worlds and also our everyday life. Anything you'd like to say or ask or anything here before we move on to an interesting idea from the Bible and DK substitutes something for it? Okay. Any thoughts? Okay, wait a second. I'm going to transfer to you over here into the other place. And any one of the staff, you know, the organizers, whatever, you can just speak up if you wish. Because I can't see your hand. And, what I discover about this book is it's very, very deep. It's been a long time since I read this many years ago, and then again, and then now again. And I find it's extraordinarily psychologically deep, and the techniques it offers are very important for what you might call clearing the consciousness within the personality. And, you know, before we take the second initiation, which is the initiation that, you know, towards which many will aspire, so many in the Tibetans group, we have to go through what DK calls a clearing process. So, you know, this work with glamour as a trained observer and so forth, this is helping us be clear in our consciousness. Okay? All right, good. Well, anyway, you know, we're thinking about this together, right? Now, the next paragraph is really interesting. In connection, therefore, with this second technique, now that's the one we are focusing on because it has most to do with our glamour formula of meditation, I would like to take some words out of the Bible, substituting the word light for the word faith. And I give you this definition. Now, you've all heard the other definition, but this one sheds a new light on the other definition. Light is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So, you know, it's normally faith, right? Normally faith. But anyway, here he goes. Light is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Now, in the Kabbalah, the whole universe is light. And everything that is in any precipitated form is light. And, you know, I might almost give a definition, kind of a peculiar one, but I might say that light is a precipitated being. You know, we're told that being descends to manifest. Okay, that's a big statement. And I might say that light is precipitated being. So there are all these different grades of light, and we, in the light that we manage to generate, we have to see still a greater light. In that light we shall see light. So light is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Then he says this is perhaps one of the most occult definitions of the light of the world that has yet been given, and its true meaning is intended to be revealed in the next two generations. Now, you know, we kind of wonder what he means by a generation. Does he mean a physical generation or a spiritual generation? And then, of course, all of the work about concerning atomic, let's just say the release of atomic energy through light and heat and all of that. In other words, matter has been shown to be, in a way, insubstantial through the release of the atomic energy. Maybe he had some, was bringing that to light, in a sense. The word faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, right? That's St. Paul's statement. The word faith is a good instance of the method of rendering, quote, blind some of the ancient truths so that their significance may not be prematurely revealed. Light and substance are synonymous terms. Soul and light are equally so. So these are very deep thoughts. You know, what is soul really? Well, he's telling us that soul is light. What is substance really? He's telling us the substance is light. Soul and light are equally synonymous terms. And in this equality of idea, light, substance, and soul, all being in a way equal, you have the key to fusion and to the at-one-ment which Christ expressed so fully for us in his life on earth. You know, Christ was, in a way, the embodied soul of humanity. The hierarchy is that as well, in a still larger sense. And he perfectly expressed soul. Now, when he returns to visibility for everybody, he's going to express the quality of being and spirit as well. So, light, we have the equivalence light, substance, soul. And every time we bring something new to light, in a sense, we're exercising a power of the soul. So all I can do is recommend that we ponder this, you know, just the way you might have, reviewed in your mind that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Substitute the word light and see what it means to you. There's always going to be a new revelation, and we're always hoping for a higher type of vibration. You know, when we hope for something, it's always of a higher nature, at least if you're a disciple or an aspirant. You want a revelation of the higher worlds. They have to come to light. So, in fact, these higher vibrations of light, we are hoping for them, we are longing for them, and every lower type of light, such as the soul, is the evidence of a still higher type of light. In other words, the soul is the evidence of the monad. What is the monad? It's a type of light, in a way. What is it the evidence of? The planetary logos? What is the planetary logos the evidence of? Every station, every point of revelation, every focused vibratory condensation reveals eventually that which produced it. Okay, now so it's a very deep paragraph here, and are there any thoughts that come to your mind or any questions? I can't say that I can answer all the questions, but you know, one makes a good try at it. Yes, I hear a voice or a something.
Yes, but, Michael.
Yes.
Ecclesia says, thank you. I have been going through a very deep experience, and every time I attend the webinar, my journey is explained, down to the hurt little desire, mostly working on Ray 3 glamours.
Okay, that's good. I mean, you know, obviously, thank you, Ecclesia, if we persist in the aura of that great training ashram, Master DK's training ashram for all different ray types, so much will come to light. I think we have no, no substantial idea of how much Master DK has revealed to us, not only in his words, but in the combinations of words upon which our intuition can begin to play. So we're on the trail of greater and greater revelation, and he assures us that the revelation that we will experience is the revelation of that which has always been. You know, it's always been there, but we have not had the sensitivity yet to register it. But with this type of training, that, you know, his ashram is meant to train disciples and aspirants for initiation. Now, this training is a long, long process, and as we work with his words, his concepts, and the ideas which they represent, always more light will come to light. In that light, in the light we have, we shall see an even greater light. Okay, thank you, Ecclesia. Anything else?
Yes. I have a message. This is Ann, although I'm using Winnie's link. Okay. Light must then be connected to our attraction or desire, seen from the personality level. And here the thoughts come to how this is working for the monad. Is that downwards?
Well, that's quite a question. I think that any point of being, you know, is light. The monad, see, light can be thrown in various directions. I think maybe this will be useful. Every station of light can see in three directions. The soul can see through its extension, the soul in incarnation, into the lower worlds. The soul can also bring to light that which exists on its own level, the higher mind, the world of souls, fellow souls, and so forth. The soul also longs for or reaches towards a higher type of light, which the monad is downpouring. So, you know, light meets light, you might say. The light of the monad reaches the upward striving light of the soul. Revelation comes to the soul, and service comes to the monad. And whichever way it goes, you know, if we deal with the monad, the same is true. The monad is going to reveal, you know, this point of being on the second plane will reveal the lower five worlds of evolution, the superhuman worlds as well. It will reveal its own world, and it will strive towards the light of the planetary logos. So our desires or our aspirations are definitely involved in all of this. We have the desire or aspiration to serve on lower levels. We have the desire for unity on our own level. We have the desire for higher inspiration coming from the kind of light that is thrown by still higher stations of light as they are looking downward, serving us. It's all a great hierarchy. It's all a great pyramid. And eventually it reaches that one unit of sublime light in any cosmos that we call, or I call anyway, the universal logos. And of course, the universal logos must realize, being a finite being, that it is but the tiniest infinitesimal compared to the absolute, the absolute deity which exists always, but is veiled whenever there is a universe. All right, maybe that's, I don't know if I was on track there, Anne, but a few thoughts anyway. Any other questions or thoughts or statements that you would like to offer? Three techniques. Technique of the presence. Now, you know, we are the presence. We are the monad. We are a unit of being immersed in our own self-limiting self-consciousness. We call it matter, you know. We're a unit of being immersed in prakriti and matter. The technique of light is going to reveal all of the interactions of the different forms and whether they are archetypally interacting or not. Now, you know, this is the world of becoming. The technique of light is going to reveal the world of becoming, and the becoming is all about becoming purposeful, archetypal, rightly arranged. There is a beautiful archetype, and all of this mess of the world of becoming has to align itself with that archetype, and light will reveal whether it's doing that or not. Then the technique of indifference is a technique of freedom. Here we are immersed in these deep worlds of matter, you know, and we can't really navigate and negotiate terribly well yet, but at least we can detach ourselves from all of the effects and realize who we are, and therefore be in a much better position, because we are indifferent, to shed light upon all of the interactions and to use the mind to arrange those interactions in such a way that they become, at last, in the right design, archetypal, which the intuition reveals. The intuition reveals the archetype. I hope that was a little bit clear. You get into these things and everybody has their own language. Okay. Yes, I hear you, Brett. I hear you as white noise.
Anne replies, wonderful, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anne. Thank you. I mean, we try. Look, you know, none of us is there yet. We stay in alignment. We try to bring through as much of the higher light as we can, and to somehow explain the interactions that we are beholding. We try to have knowledge about it. We try to have wisdom about it. And eventually, something even higher, pure, straight knowledge or revelation. Okay. Realization. Let me call it realization. Such a wonderful book this is. Let's see. I don't know if we have... Well, you know... Oh, goodness. Maybe we'll wait till the next time to get into this next part, because I would like to review a few of the Ray 5 glamours. I thought that we would make it further, but I talk too much. Okay. Anyway, let's just see here. So this would be the end of Doggy Readings, okay. Number 6, and then then we'll begin here next time. And number 7, and that's going to be next week, right? So today is the 8th, and it'll be the July 15th. All right, and this one was July 8th. There's only so much we can assimilate. Now, obviously, we could go on and on, and it would be very interesting, but, you know, we have to keep things in proportion and within due bounds. But just one little seed for the future that we'll discuss later. When the aspirant has made progress in soul contact, they've taken a first important step toward the comprehension of light, and this is the sentence that I want you to have in your mind. They must, however, be careful not to confuse the light which they can bring to bear on life, circumstance, and events, and on environment with the intuition. Don't confuse this light, in this technique of light, with the intuition. And we'll deal with that the next time we get together next week. And after that, and after next week, I'll give you at least 5 more, they won't be links, but I'll give you one link for 5 or 10 more programs to make it easy. And remember, the ASK program, we always have a general link which you can use for all the programs that Tuya and I have been presenting on triangles, the reappearance of the Christ, the souls of nations, and the attracting money for hierarchical purposes. Okay, now let me go on to the Ray 5 glamours, although he says, you know, they're a bit more like illusions in a way. They're much more likely to be thought of as illusions, but whenever you get your emotional body involved with your illusions, which is a a Ray 4 thing to do, but remember, we are a Ray 4 kingdom. Whenever you get your emotional body involved, you can make a glamour out of any illusion. So we have to learn how to think straight first in order to disabuse ourselves of the kind of glamours which fog our lives. And that's why the master can be met upon the plane of mind. That's where they work. They work upon the plane of mind with the modern Aryan disciple, clarify our thinking, and eventually the world of glamour is also going to be seen through and clarified. All right, so here are some Ray 5 glamours and a few things that I've said about them. These can be found in the book Glamour World Problem, page 122 and 123. The glamour of materiality or overemphasis on form. Now, this is when the fifth ray is beginning to be used. Remember, the fifth ray is also the ray of the solar angel, the ray of the angel of the presence, and it can be used for very, very high and beautiful things. So this glamour of focusing on the senses, it's very Martian in a way. Mars is something of a fifth-ray planet and involves brain registration and materialization of science. Uranus involves making science into occult science, but Mars materializes our perceptions. So the glamour of materiality, overemphasis on form, and this ignores, of course, the greater part of life. It's just a fragment. So we overemphasize the importance of one part over the value of the whole. And that's one of the big problems with glamour. If you just emphasize one point and you don't see the whole, and you exaggerate the importance of that point, then that is glamour. It is exaggeration and minimization. Now, the way to deal with that is, interestingly, through Libra, in which the sign, which the planet Mars is in detriment. Mars is weakened in the sign Libra, and then Libra helps you see things in right proportion. Now, the fifth ray types are deeply involved in materialism, in materialistic perception. What you see is what you get, and they don't develop the higher senses. Of course, later they do. And when they do develop the higher senses, now, here's what I want to say. Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater gave us a lot of very interesting scientific assessments of the inner worlds. They were using the fifth ray. I think each one of them had a fifth ray mind, even though Leadbeater was extremely, you know, psychically oriented and Besant had real abilities. So they used the fifth ray to clarify the factuality of higher dimensions. Now, obviously, they're not going to be so stuck in glamour as the people who have the strictly materialistic, dense sensory consciousness. And, you know, fifth ray is a wonderful ray, but it has to be sublimated to be applied to the higher worlds, and it actually already is in the case of quite a number of people. DK has told us that the fifth ray type is the true occultist. So their revelation is occult rather than mystical. Okay. Now, you know, test yourself out here. You know, if you have fifth ray in your nature, or, you know, you have astrological factors which seem to bring in the fifth ray, whether you have whether you fall into this or not. The glamour of the intellect. Okay. Well, it's an important, very important, you know. But there are other instruments and other vehicles of apprehension, the feelings, the intuition, you know. There's so much more than simply the intellect in terms of apprehending reality. So, you know, so all that's nonsense, the intellectual types say. And people have been talking a lot more lately about what they call emotional intelligence. Now, putting that in occult terms, we might say that emotional intelligence is the effect of the soul as it works through the astral body to help it to be sensitive to the general state of dissonance or unification around one. So there are many ways of being intelligent. and the intellect is only one of them. So again, you just have partial vision and the inability to approach life in terms of its full, its full reality. Now, that doesn't mean that we can discount the intellect. The intellect is really used by DK wonderfully to reveal how things are. But if we shut off everything else, it's a glamour. The glamour of knowledge and of definition. Well, it's important again, but you can't really confine reality to narrow mental terms. It can be clarifying, but it's not the whole thing. It's the menu and it's not the meal. So and it's the map and it's not the terrain, if you know what I mean. So the true nature and value of what is observed is missing. Now, I can see that I fall into both of these, you know, at various times. And I get all involved in a couple of these things. I love to define everything I can, you know. In my book on infinitization of selfhood, I've got a 250-page section, which is nothing but definitions. So I guess I'm subject to the glamour of knowledge and definition. Okay, the glamour of assurance based on a narrow point of view. The two rays which are likely to give the most narrow point of view when they are not yet cultivated and spiritualized are the fifth ray and the sixth ray. And you get those together and you really have all of the theological excesses and all kinds of dogmatism when you put those two rays together. So, sure, I just look at one thing and I'm absolutely sure of what I know. But in fact, I'm ignoring so many things. I'm only seeing the part again. I'm only valuing the part, and I'm just convinced that that's all there is. When people tell you that's all there is, you know they're shutting out a big part of life, and they're exaggerating or minimizing. They're exaggerating their little part and minimizing all the rest, and that is distortion, and that is glamour. So the concrete mind is important, but it fails to see many things as they really are. And this is a general one, the glamour of the form, which hides reality. This is fundamental to this ray type. So they concentrate upon the form, and consciousness is blind to other factors. I call it the exclusion of the real. Now here is an interesting, if you go to the techniques of integration of the fifth ray, let's see if I can get a little bit more of that. It has some wonderful things, and you get the idea of it. The word goes forth from soul to form. Behind that form, I am. Know me. Cherish and know and understand the nature of the veils of life. Those are the forms. But know as well the one who lives. Who's behind the form? Know me. Let not the forms of nature, their processes and powers, prevent thy searching for the mystery which brought the mysteries to thee. Know well the form, but leave it joyously and search for me. Well, it takes a long time. You know, page 369, 368, that's a wonderful section there about the problems of the fifth ray in esoteric psychology too. It takes a long time before the fifth ray type is willing to leave obsession with the form behind. I can really call it obsession with the form. I think that's correct. So the glamour of the form which hides reality, and the reality is the big me that is talking in that technique of integration. Now here's one, the glamour of organization. I would almost think that this would be a seventh ray glamour, but he applies it here. You know, it makes you think. And the lines between things are perceived in a manner hard and fast. This is different from that, different from that, different from that. And DK is going to tell us that wherever there is the perception of difference, there is illusion. So I would almost call this the glamour of classification. You know, maybe if you've taken biology or botany and all the rest, all the different plants and animals are meticulously classified into their categories and so forth. This is a fifth-ray tendency. You want to keep all of your perceived demarcations in order. Now, really, that's very useful for navigating this everyday life, but it is fundamentally an illusory unreality. The factor of fusing and of blending, so necessary to see what reality really is missing in the early days of the fifth ray. Here again, the glamour of the outer, which hides the inner, that's obvious until the fifth ray type really etherealizes or elevates the use of the fifth ray. And here are some interesting, these are not glamours, but you can just see how it works. The energy of ignorance, criticism, rationalize and destroy, mental separation, knowledge leading to material activity, detailed analysis, you lose the whole, you analyze things so much you don't see the forest, you only see the trees, intense materialism, temporarily negating God, isolating something until it's not related to anything else anymore, emphasizing wrongly, distorting truth, all of these things found, and then finally, I have to laugh, because I probably have been there a long time myself, theology, you know, where you organize everything that God is and God thinks until it's perfectly defined, and somehow you have captured God and the divine in strictly intellectual concepts. Obviously, there's a big problem there, and that led to many abuses during the Christian era where, you know, you would be sought out if you were a heretical thinker, and, you know, it was terrible what happened there. But right thought, and it's even happening today, you know, with other religions, if you don't think correctly, we kill you. You know, that is a terrible limitation of the concrete mind with the fanatical sixth ray combined. Okay, are there any thoughts or questions here about these glamours? Maybe I can make them glamours of the fifth ray. Did anybody recognize yourself? Brett? No, I promised Brett that I would ask him to say yep or yes for everyone, but...
yes to them all.
Oh, my goodness, that's humility. Oh, my God. Okay. Anyway, and I have to admit... I don't think I have the fifth ray so much in this life, but maybe I'm cultivating it, and I know I've had it as a legacy ray. And then from astrology, you know, you have to look, if you read The Destiny of the Nations, you will see that when he analyzes every country, the rays that are brought in by the signs of the country are given almost equal value to the rays in the ray chart. Now think about that for a minute. You have the rays in your ray chart. This is the soul ray. This is the personality ray of the nation. And then you have their astrology. And the astrology brings in other rays. And these other rays are also very important. So when you're looking at your astrological chart, it's not only the rays of your ray chart. It's the rays of the astrological factors which are present there. Now, in my own case, I have a lot of Aquarius, which is fifth ray, you know. I have ruling planets in Aquarius, so that would be one source of the fifth ray. And you can do this for yourself as you analyze. I think it's interesting. Okay, any thoughts here? Any questions on these glamours?
Yes. Yes, Efrosini says, it seems like illusions are not like glamours.
Yeah, well, okay. And he's going to develop that idea, and that is true. Illusion, there are seven different types of illusion, and we're going to study them eventually. And they basically are based upon fragmentation of some kind. In other words, the world is a seamless wholeness, and the illusion, you know, largely connected with the fifth ray, divides everything up into parts and pieces, and you don't see the oneness of them. The intuition reveals the oneness of things. But glamours are distortions and fogs. And, you know, people can be very, very clear in thinking about their illusions. You know, they can have a clear mind, which is totally under the spell of illusion. But in glamour, there is an unclarity, there is a vagueness, there is a longing an emotional longing for unrealities. So in general, although the two are quite mixed together in what we call the kama manas of the average thinker, the glamours have more to do with an emotional state which exaggerates things due to desire, or minimizes them due to desire, and illusions have more to do with simply incorrect perceptions about the oneness of things and their proper relationships. So I guess, you know, I sometimes use an image about what is illusory. Maybe some of you have studied biology, and you have studied the insect kingdom, or let's say grasshoppers, and you notice that the eye of the grasshopper is not round. It is made of many little geometrical parts that are divided from each other. What's it called? The compound eye or something like that. It's a fragmented eye which divides the field of vision into many little parts and pieces. Well, when we human beings learned how to have the round eye rather than the compound fragmented eye, we will see the world as one united thing instead of all divided into parts and pieces which are not really separate from each other. I think that is the basis of illusion, at least for me at this moment. Now, DK defines it in very practical ways, and we're going to get into that. There are seven different ways of dealing illusorily with life. But first we have to handle glamour a bit, because it's more of a problem. The emotional state of, you know, we live on a planet that has not controlled its astral body, and we have not controlled our astral body, and our astral body is out of control, and our desires are for things that are not of real value. I'm talking about humanity as a whole, and we have to deal with that first, and then after that, really clarify the mental field. But what I would do, is I'd get into the book, and if you're really, really interested in it, go to the section on illusion and the seven major illusions that he talks about. Okay. Other questions or thoughts?
Michael?
Yes.
It would seem to me the question is related to the idea that maybe these glamours are more like illusions for the fifth ray.
He says something of that nature. He says the problem is not so much, but when you bring your illusions onto the, you know, when you get the emotions involved, it becomes glamorous. Then your desires aggravate your perceptions, if I can put it that way. So yeah, I think there's a lot of illusion here for sure, but there's also a way of dealing with life which is not, I want to use the word, wholesome. Whenever glamours are affecting people, they don't have a wholesome attitude to life. But, you know, I'm deliberately playing on words here. I wonder if I could... Brett, do you know where that thing is on illusion? I mean, it might not hurt just to run down the just to name what he calls the illusions. Let's see. I guess one of the things we can do, illusion. Let's see. Acquisitive. No, did I spell that right? Acquisitive, acquisition. Acquisition? No, I'm not doing it correctly. I know where that is, but unfortunately there are so many of them that I probably can't find this the way I want to. You know, and I don't want to go through 171. if you can find the place where they are in the book, just let me know, okay? Because otherwise, I'll just be hunting forever here. Okay, well, maybe I'm getting close. Okay, distortion sets in, etc., etc. No, this is not the place. Anyway, he lists the seven illusions. You know, it has to do sometimes with... here's one. Here's illusion through the wrong perception of an idea. Maybe there's others. Through wrong interpretation, this is it, this is the place. Page 59, 58, illusion through wrong interpretation. Illusion through wrong appropriation of ideas, they don't belong to you. You're not going to be able to really apply them. Illusion through wrong direction of ideas. Illusion through wrong integration of an idea. Illusion through wrong embodiment of ideas. And finally, illusion through wrong application of ideas. That's going to be a whole area of study that we're going to get into. But and you know, DK will tell us that it's probably an illusion to separate glamour from illusion too excessively, because they do intermix and interact, especially when we have the kama monastic mind that we seem to have at the moment. Anything else, Brett, you want to say about this, since you teach this subject? Okay, I should turn it over to you. All right.
No.
But you're quite right that this is a ray that is more given to the fragmentation of illusion than the glamour. But you've seen people rigidly, fanatically, desirously hold these points of view. And when they do that, they have strengthened the illusion with desire, and they really see a distorted world, and they're attached to their distorted view of the world. Now, attachment is a big problem with glamour. You can have a whole lot of thoughts and not be attached to them. You just have thoughts. But when glamour is involved, you are attached to your particular vision of reality, and it is creating a great confusion in how you deal with your life. Okay, anybody else? And then we'll get into our meditation. Any other thoughts?
Yes.
Yes.
Klesia asks, you mentioned Mars, but how does fifth-ray Venus feature in this glamour?
Fifth-ray Venus, actually, the fifth ray is the soul ray of Venus, in my view. And generally, the function of Venus is a solution to this problem. You see, DK didn't give us all the rays of all the planets. Basically, he gave us the soul ray of the sacred planets and the personality ray of the non-sacred planets. But if one researches the matter carefully, one can see that he has hinted even at the monadic ray of some of the planets. So basically, Venus is all about solving the problems of the lower concrete mind, which operates under Mars, Saturn, and what's the other one? Oh, lower Mercury. Venus comes along generally and gives more higher light to the mind and helps it to bridge into a more inclusive point of view. Now, if I, of course, that doesn't mean that a person who, you know, Venus can be abused, but the abuse of Venus is normally in the second ray and sixth ray area. Because the highest ray of Venus, the monadic ray, is the sixth, giving way to the second ray. And probably the personality ray of Venus is the second ray. So normally when you find abuses of the planet Venus, they have to do with love and attraction and attachment and, you know, laziness and the life of comfort, if I can put it that way. Those are often the abuses. They have to do with the love nature. But when you get into the fifth ray of Venus, that is a higher type of expression. I want to turn here to the book Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. It's Volume 1, and I'm going to hope that I can target this more or less on page, I don't know, 65 maybe. It's not exactly here, but it's coming close. So you're going to see some beautiful things related to the fifth ray, and it's more Venusian quality. So here it is, and Right here. Yeah, okay. The Venus rules the solar angels and has a lot to do with the angelic kingdom. And so these are the factors of the fifth ray when Venus is involved. You know, God and his angels now arise. That's going to be always the first statement. Let the mountaintops emerge from out the dense, wet mist. Let the sun touch their summits, and let them stand in light, shine forth. I think that embodies it. The fifth ray lord is the most luminous of all the ray lords, the most luminous. And at the second ray souls are the most luminous souls. With the second and the fifth, you get high luminosity, and Venus carries fifth ray luminosity and not obscurative concretion. So it's a different use of the fifth ray through Venus, and generally it's going to elevate you into the higher mind if you use it properly. Mars will confine you to the lower mind. Lower Saturn will confine you to the lower mind. Lower Mercury, the same. I hope that's a little bit clarifying. Anything else? Okay. Anything from our staff that you would like to say? Because I can't see your hands. Okay. All right. Great. Look, you know, it'd be nice to know it all. And you know, when I think about Master DK, I think, well, here's someone who knows it all. But he'd be the first one to tell you, I don't know it all. I just know a fragment, and that fragment is a fragmentary compared to the planetary logos. Who doesn't know it all, being simply a non-sacred planet, you know, compared to Venus? Who doesn't know it all compared to the Sun? And on it goes until you reach the reach the greatest being in our whole cosmos, who definitely doesn't know it all compared to absolute infinitude of the absolute deity. So we always have just a tiny little circle of knowledge, all of us. And we do the best with that little bit of knowledge that we have. And with the little bit of knowledge that we have, we try to archetypalize our immediate environment. You know what I mean by that? There's a purpose. There's a divine design. There's a perfect relationship. It's called right relations. And with the little bit of knowledge we have, we try to render our little sphere more archetypal than it has been, and when we do that, purpose comes through. Okay, and then, you know, that's why we're here. All right, so that'll be that, and now into the meditation, and like I say, I'm not going to do the whole meditation now, because we are getting to the point where we can streamline it just a little bit. We certainly want to know the individual glamour that we are working with, and we do remember that if we succeed in working with an individual glamour, we are doing our part in general to clarify the larger world glamour. So individual is not just individual. If you clean up something in your own immediate sphere, you are doing something for the larger context in which you live. But of course, there is a specific formula for the eradication of the world and group glamour, and we'll, you know, get into that when we can handle that. Okay, so I'm going to actually go to the place where the technique begins here, but I just want to say that in preparation and in general, let us realize that there are three types of light that we have to bring together. There is the light of the lower vehicles, astral, etheric, and dense physical. There's the light of the mind and the light of the soul. Now, every one of us we want to draw upward through the imagination the light of the personality in general, the lower parts of it, because every atom has this light value. We want to draw this up through the imagination and merge it with the light of mind in the mental body. And we've created a union then in our imagination of the light of the mind and the lesser lights which radiate from the atoms of our lower personality. And then each one of us and the group as a whole wants to align with the light of the soul. And remembering that in DK's definition, it is a higher light, the soul is light. You might as well be saying that consciousness is light. And we can visualize, however we wish, the light of the soul. And draw, or imagine that soul light descending into the mind where there is already a fusion, an imaginative fusion between the light of the personality and the light of the mind, and now the light of the higher mind comes in. So a threefold light that we imagine is created on the mental plane. It's a plane we can control. A threefold light. And each of us then is focused on the plane of mind, and we are aligned with our higher self, with the angel of the presence, so to speak, in our causal soul body, our causal body, our egoic lotus. We're aligned with that higher light, and we have brought it into our locus of control. We cannot control the higher mind, but we can control the lower mind. At least not yet, we can't control the higher mind. Now, through the act of creative imagination, we endeavor to see the soul, at least our causal, the sort of a picture here of our rendering of our causal body. It's not how it is, but it's, gives you an idea. We endeavor to see the soul imaginatively and hear the soul, and it is a source of light and power. And it is breathing out the Om into the mind of the attentive, waiting personality. The soul is breathing the Om. So let's hear that internally. We won't sound it. We'll, as if, hear the soul breathing forth three Oms that will enter the mind of the attentive waiting personality. And it's there in the mind that the light and the power of the soul is as if retained and held by the positive personality. We are exercising positivity, we are not passive. We don't have a negative attitude. We're very alert. And that presence of soul light and soul power is imagined to be with us on the plane of mind. So there, that light of the soul is blending and merging with the dual light of the personality, and what we have generated then, the visualization of an intense light, a searchlight of, as he says, great brilliance and strength. A sphere of vivid, brilliant light, not radiating or projecting yet, but there it is on the plane of mind. So we take some moments to visualize that sphere of vivid, brilliant light. Then we pause and we focus our will behind the light which has been created by the fusion of the three lights. Each one of us do this in our own way, focusing our will behind, supporting the three fused lights. Soul, personality, will. Will of the soul, will of the personality. It is dynamic, but not yet fully in action. Not yet magnetic or radiatory. It's ready to be those things. This is a very willful activity in which we are going to engage. We have to realize that. Now, in our thought, we bring together, thoughtfully, the glamour to be dissipated. We have an idea of what that glamour is, and the searchlight of the mind. We think of these two things together, bringing them into relationship by the power of thought. Recognizing their different natures. Because they are going to interact, so we have to know the nature of each one, the triple will-supported light and that glamour out there on the astral plane. be objective about the glamour, of course, so you don't strengthen it. Make sure your solar plexus doesn't get involved when you think about it. Okay, now we enter the more active phase. We have the necessary concentration. We have a realization about what's going to happen and how these two factors are related, the light and the glamour. So by an active will and of creative imagination, we turn on the searchlight and see a vivid beam of light streaming forth, piercing the glamour, a broad, brilliant beam pouring forth from the illumined mind onto the astral plane, and we believe this is so. So each in our own way, let us do this. Turn on the searchlight, pierce the glamour. So we've started the process, and now we get more technical. We name the glamour. We see it in process of dissipation. And we use these mantric phrases. You can say them out loud with me and then substitute the glamour that you're working with. The power of the light prevents the appearance of the glamour of. The power of the light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting me. The power of the light destroys the life or vitality behind the glamour. This is an affirmation of power and purpose. A point of tension is focused, immovable will, and we do this at a point of tension. The mind held steady in the light of the soul. And you can do this, even this little section, in a daily way. It just takes a little while. As we sound the Om in this act of penetration, we continue our visualization and we see the beam making a definite impact upon the glamour. See the Om and the beam penetrating the glamour and being absorbed by it. We see this power, the Om and the beam dissipating the glamour slowly so that it will never again be so powerful and will eventually disappear altogether. Light of the sun can shine through. And we imagine that the beam is doing its work, has done its work, and eventually truly will have done its work. Then we withdraw our beam and refocus it upon the mental plane. Close with an Om. Om. I guess we all become unicorns one day, and this beam of light, which carries the power of the soul, power of the mind, and of the personality, is much like the horn of the unicorn, and we can be effective in clarifying the astral plane so that people are not led astray by their own distorted desires. That includes us, of course. Okay. And DK gives the brief brief outline of the formula. Get to be second nature for us. It's all clear, 10 points. So probably best to memorize those or get the sense of what follows what, and then you can use this at any time, and we'll become light bearers, and we'll use the light to help end that factor, glamour, of which both Alice Bailey and DK said they had a certain horror, a horror of glamour. It is a world problem. It's terribly obstructive, as we can see in the world situation today, people being driven by their distorted desires to do all kinds of things which are not related to the soul. So we are working occultly to help. Are there any thoughts or questions before we close our work for today? It's serious work, folks, serious work, and of course one has to protect oneself too, and like we talked about last week, that sevenfold wheel of divine love, where you see, you stand in the center of the wheel, you are the hub of the wheel, and the seven aspects of love as seven rays are radiating outward. It's a protection, and it's also a clarification for whatever those rays of light and love may touch. Because, you know, we don't necessarily know our weak points. Not all of them, you know. I remember Mary Bailey joked once, I thought she was serious, you know, but she says, I have a few blind spots and I'm aware of every one of them. I said, oh, really? Okay. But by definition, a blind spot is that of which we are not aware. So we may surprise ourselves when we do this work, and things may come to light, you know, as Pluto does its work, dragging things to the surface. Things may come to light about ourselves that we didn't realize, may not always be pretty. So, you know, you just have to have faith in the immortal soul, which we are, the immortal God within, as DK says. Identify as the immortal God within. And of course, that is ultimately the monad. It's a great protection to realize what we are. So many people don't realize what they are, and because of it, they are weakened. But when a person realizes who and what that person really is, it's a strength. So this work has its liabilities, and just watch yourself. You know, if you find yourself getting really emotional about something, it might be an area of your life which is being exposed or which needs attention and needs you as the trained observer to see it. Okay, any thoughts or questions you'd like to offer before we close? Okay. Tuya or Livy, do you want to say anything? This is the three of us who got this this little aspect of this work started. Many people in different places are doing the glamour work, but Little Triangle has started this particular expression of the work. Okay. Well then, if there isn't, then what I would do is, if I can get there, is just use our mantram, you know, 5 o'clock mantram. Oop, there it is. It'll come now. There it is. And we'll use the word we. The three aspects of divinity are listed there. Power, love, and, well, let's just say self-forgetfulness of the first ray, harmlessness of the second, and right speech of the third. That's one way to look at it. We'll start with an om and end with an om. May the power of the one life pour through the group of all true servers. May the love of the one soul characterize the lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. May we fulfill our part in the one work. Through self-forgetfulness, harmlessness, and right speech. Okay, thank you everybody, and next week we continue with our reading and we'll deal with that particular ray which seems to sponsor more glamours almost than any other, the sixth ray. But remember how important that ray was for selecting workers to work with World Glamour. Every one of them that DK selected had a very powerful sixth ray to put him or her in touch with the astral plane where the work had to be done. So, remember now in our ASK program, tomorrow we will be invoking the soul of the Philippines. That's a very important area of the world in which there are some strong changes occurring at the moment. And then Sunday, 5 a.m. GMT, we'll be dealing with the invocation of money for hierarchical purposes, and then next week we'll switch back to the p.m. time. So just make sure that you have the link for all the ASK programs, and it's a different link for the Glamour because it's a webinar where we're doing more discussing. The others are broadcast, usually broadcast by Tuya. I'm filling in just a little bit this week as Tuya is out of town and on other things. So join us, and we will, through the persistent drumbeat of meditation, do our best to change the world situation for the better by using occult meditation. Bye-bye. See you now. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.